Welcome to Corporate Chat Podcast. Your hosts for today are Emmanuel and myself, Shiraz. Thank you to our sponsors, Deloitte, Cimentov Development, LTD, and Red Bull. Our guest for today is Poonam Singh. Poonam is the managing partner in risk advisory at Deloitte in Canada and Chile. She is known to love serving customers and building careers. A few of her specialties include entrepreneurship, leadership development, mergers, acquisitions, and many more.
Hello, Poonam. Nice to meet you. It's a pleasure to have you on our podcast today.
Thank you, Emmanuel and Shiraz. It's a real pleasure to be here today.
We'll start with our first question.
As a woman who has a diverse background and achieved a preeminent position in Canada, can you share your experiences and insight on how your unique cultural perspective has influenced your approach to your career?
Excellent question. I would say it's somebody who's not just like traveled around the world, but has actually lived in various countries. What it has given me is a perspective on how business is done, what cultural values intersect with business norms, and how like human beings interact with one another. And what you realize is there's a lot of commonality no matter where you are. There's a certain aspect of just the human condition, which is common, but then there is a lot of differences and nuance as well in various cultures around the world. So just having a global perspective, I think, has made me a lot more empathetic. It's given me a genuine perspective on how organizations work across the world and adapt to the various cultural norms and priorities of people that are in the respective regions. It also helps me and gives me a specific edge when it comes to leading teams that are very diverse, because they come from a certain background, they come from a certain perspective. That's just very natural for me to understand and absorb. And then ultimately, I would say in the business that I'm in, our clients are looking for individuals that don't only have a Canadian perspective, but they have a perspective on what organizations are doing around the world. And the fact that I'm able to actually bring that perspective that might be cross-industry, that might be multinational, is actually quite unique. So I do think having a global perspective is a very important differentiating factor when it comes to not just being in business, but I also think just as a human being, quite frankly.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. In terms of that, which country in the world was your favorite to live in and why?
That's such a good question, Shiraz. I would say England would be one that I feel is quite near and dear to me. It's a place I've spent formative years of my life. It's a place I've spent as an adult. It's a place where my daughter was born. And so I would say there is a certain history to England that I quite enjoy. So whether it's the fact that it's particularly London, it's such an ancient, timeless city that I do find quite fascinating how it survived and thrived, you know, over the various centuries. So I find that city quite exciting, quite vibrant. These days, it's a technology hub as well. There's a lot of innovation that's going on because it attracts a lot of people from around the world. It's also emotionally close to me because my daughter was born there. So there's a lot of personal fond memories as well. And then I feel like, again, when I look at organizations in London particularly, they have such a great multinational footprint that most people who live and work there have that perspective of being able to live globally in different countries, but also work in different places. So I would say London would be one of my favorite. But then I would also say Calgary, it might shock you when I say that, but I have found Calgary to be an amazing city to be a young professional in. When I first moved to Canada, I was only 20 years old. And Calgary is a very thriving oil and gas city, and it has a very entrepreneurial bent of mind. So for somebody like me to move there, it just made me a better entrepreneur. Most people in Calgary can be quite transient. They're there for a job, they're there for opportunities. So again, it's a city that allows you to navigate people from around the world, that allows you to hone in your entrepreneurship as well, build relationship in a different way. And then ultimately, I would say the business culture is such where there's a lot of innovation that is encouraged and appreciated. And then on a personal level, I would say the big backdrop of the Rocky Mountains is so stunning. It made me an athlete and appreciate the Canadian winters whether it is being on the mountain snowboarding or in the summer hiking or just learning to run at an altitude. So I would say Calgary has been really critical for me as well, both from a business standpoint, but also on a personal level.
You see yourself living in Canada for the rest of your career years, or do you see yourself moving to London, maybe?
It's such a good question. I don't know the answer to that, you know. I think there's a lot in Canada that I have appreciated. It's the longest I've ever lived as an adult, quite frankly. Half my life has been in Canada, so it's certainly a country that's given me so much opportunity. It's given me a platform to grow up both as an individual but also in the corporate world as well. Having said that, Canada can sometimes feel very finite and very small in some ways as well. When I look at the global footprint of Canadian companies, there's not many that actually operate very globally. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think the older I'm getting, I feel like sometimes what matters is the people you work with, and the people I work with are unbelievable and amazing. And if I could just look at that, I could see myself being here forever. But then there's a part of me that feels like I also want different challenges and opportunities, which means perhaps another location, another country might be helpful as well. I also think my daughter is only three, and it would be great for her to have a perspective that's global too. So being able to experience another country, another culture, whether it is London or another place, would actually be quite interesting and cool. So I would say TBD. I'm still sort of enjoying what I'm doing, but I'm open to opportunities in the future as well.
Would you describe yourself as someone who's always open to trying new things? And if so, how do you think that translates into your daily life and also your professional life?
Really good question, Shiraz. Like, I fundamentally believe that growth happens when you step outside your comfort zone. And part of that is actually saying yes to different things, even if it makes you very, very uncomfortable. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you become with just lots of different things. And you build up this repertoire of experiences, both professional and personal. So certainly, I would say I'm very adaptive to change. I like to say yes to different experiences, different opportunities. When it comes to my personal life, I would say, you know, if it's a matter of moving across from Calgary to Toronto for a business opportunity, I've actually done that and I didn't think much about it. And it's been an incredible experience for me. If I look at the friendships I have in my personal life, I try to have not just individuals that are like me, but individuals that are different. They come from, you know, they are artists in some cases, or creatives, or in the athletic fitness industry, or they practice yoga, or they're in business. And I quite enjoy the various spheres. And I like to make myself open to different kinds of individuals and their experiences. And I would say professionally, I am so lucky that I'm in an organization where it allows for different opportunities in your career. And the more you sort of take on these various opportunities, the more I believe you are rewarded for it as well, because it makes you a leader that has been pushed to experience just different things, solve different types of problems, experience different obstacles, take on opportunities that might be, you know, quite varied. And so it makes you a more holistic, well-rounded leader as well. So yes, I would say so. Like, I would consider myself somebody who certainly likes change and is comfortable with change. I would also say, again, I think maybe it's the older you get, maybe you feel a bit uncomfortable with change. When I see a 3-year-old or I see individuals like you guys, the average age in my organization is 21 or 22, and I think they are so ready for change to a point where I think they want a different job every year, a different opportunity every year. They get bored quite easily. And I would say the older I'm getting, I quite enjoy the teams I've built. And I would be lying if I said it doesn't feel a little bit more uncomfortable to try out different things and work with a different team. But again, as I said, every single time I do it, I think it makes me a better person. It challenges a different dimension of me as a leader, but also as my individual personality. And ultimately, when I look back at the 5-year period or the 10-year period, I think change has almost always been good for me. It may not feel like that in the moment, but certainly in retrospect and hindsight, it almost always is. So I would encourage everybody to actually experience change. I don't know if changing a job every year is a good idea, but nonetheless, saying yes to different opportunities is certainly a great idea.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. At the lab, mandates are up from 3 to 5 years, I think. What do you think you will pursue after your mandate for your current role?
Awesome question. I think there comes a point in your career when you're really senior. There's only so many roles, quote unquote, that you can vie for. And, it's not always your experience that gets you those roles. It's timing. It's the needs of the firm at a given point in time. It's the fact that there's so many others who might also want similar opportunities. So I am recognizing that the senior you get in an organization, it isn't just your experience. There's so many other variables that go into determining who gets the next job, because there's only a handful of jobs left, quite frankly, at very senior levels. So I don't know, Emmanuel, what I want to do after this, but I do know that the experience that I have allows me to lead a large P&L or a large business. The experience I've had allows me to actually play a very important role in a given industry or a sector. I could use my skill sets of being an account leader in my history as well to lead a big account, and it could be a multinational account for that matter. I could have the opportunity to do something in strategy and innovation. I feel really proud that I've actually gathered experiences that are quite diverse that allows me to do many different things. And so the question will become at some point what the firm thinks is the highest and best use for me that intersects with what might be a priority for them as well. But then in the meantime, I'm also quite excited to do the job that I'm in. And that's not done yet, even though it feels like I've been in it for a period of time. So sometimes it can feel a bit uncomfortable to not know what's next, but I also feel the best thing you can do is do the best in the job you're in, gain the right experience, do the right things, build the right relationships. And when the
Yes,
time
all
is
those.
right, keep an open mind for trying out something different. And I think I've experienced enough that I'm quite open-minded about what might be next as well. So I'm keeping an open mind.
That's great. Could you share a significant challenge you've encountered in your career and maybe describe the strategies and actions you employ to successfully overcome it?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it because a part of me always feels like, when I look at challenges, I have always looked at them as learning opportunities. So when I look back and think, I always wonder, my gosh, have I just had a really spirited, charming career or life? But that's not true. I mean, there are obviously obstacles. I just sort of look at them with rose-colored glasses and feel like they were unbelievable learning opportunities. But the one thing I'll say, I am a not so young leader anymore, but in some ways a young leader. But more than just whatever my age might be, I've always looked younger than my actual age. And so I would say there's always been an underpinning of being too young, and that has real consequences, right? When you start off in your career, somebody tells you, oh my gosh, you're so young. It isn't generally a compliment. It can have connotations around, do you have the right experience? Should you be here? And that can be a really daunting sort of undertone when you go in. And so I've always felt like I've had to prove myself more than my peers. I started schooling very young. I graduated university when I was 19. I've had 23 years of work experience. In many ways, I have more experience than many of my peers, but because I am a few years younger, but likely I look a lot younger, I feel like I always put the pressure on myself to be better, to push myself more. And I think that comes from a deeper insecurity of wanting to prove myself because that comment of, oh my gosh, you're so young, doesn't feel like a compliment. It feels like a microaggression around perhaps you shouldn't be here. Perhaps you're not deserving of this. Perhaps you don't have the right experience. But again, when I look at it, I always think, okay, game on. If I am, then let me actually stand out and prove that I actually deserve to be at this table and that, in fact, I have the right experience and perspectives to bring to this conversation. So I'll certainly say when I look back, that is a theme or an undercurrent that I've always had in my life. And then now it's contrasted with, I'll be in scenarios where I'm around so many young people that I've suddenly become sometimes the oldest person in the room. So I'm adapting to that as well, because that means that, you know, are you relevant to your young people? Are you able to lead them in a way that resonates with them? And so I'm constantly learning, because I just find myself either I'm too young or too old, depending on the scenario. And I need to find comfort in just where I'm at and the age I'm at and the experience that I bring to the table. But I would say, I think often women are told that, and women that look different or look younger, there becomes a connotation of being young, which can be conflated with being inexperienced. Whereas I don't generally think men get that in the same way. Like, we look at our global CEO, who is, in my mind, a relatively young leader, but his age is just never a factor, because, you know, it's just never come up in a way where that has seemed like an inhibitor. But I often have gotten that.
Do you think that the, like, the how would I say it, the idea around being senior in a business has changed? Because usually senior means older, but like now I think it has developed to being more able than another, and age doesn't define you anymore as much.
Yeah. You're right, Emmanuel. I mean, it's like, it's so interesting, right? When you look at organizations, there are different types of organizations. I think what's magical about this time, this moment in time, is the fact that there is so much emphasis and there's a marketplace for entrepreneurship, that when you look at a lot of founder-led organizations, you see a lot of young leaders. When you look at a lot of tech startups or large tech organizations, you'll see a lot of really young individuals. I mean, I would say one of my clients is Google, and my counterpart would essentially be somebody in their 20s. So depending on the industry you're in, you're bang on, age really doesn't seem to matter, but that isn't consistently true either, right? I mean, there are organizations that require deep expertise in something, and to build that deep expertise, it requires time. And whether it's 10,000 hours or it's 10,000 hours of many different skill sets. So I think we're in a very important sort of transition period where organizations are quite different. But I would still say, certainly from my vantage point, when I see a lot of senior leaders in Canada, in corporate America, that is likely non-tech organizations, my peer group would generally tend to be older in age. But your comment on seniority is quite interesting to me, because you're right. When I was growing up in corporate Canada, corporate North America, I would say seniority meant somebody who held a title. I do genuinely believe that seniority is with individuals that have influence, and influence isn't just about title, right? And so you could be massively influential in terms of bringing about change, adoption of new ideas, being able to recruit the next generation, and you may not have a title. And that to me is a really amazing place to be, because, you know, title feels very myopic and finite, and there's only so many titles. But if it's about influence and impact and outcomes, then I feel like that creates opportunities for everybody to be a leader at every level. And that to me is, I think, the exciting part of this moment in time in history.
That's great. I also wanted to ask, have you ever had or identified with imposter syndrome? And if so, what advice would you give to people, and specifically women, who might struggle with that?
You know what, Shiraz, it's so funny. You will hate my answer because it's so controversial. I find everybody I meet talks about imposter syndrome, particularly women. And so part of me feels like, did we all go to a classroom and somebody told you must have imposter syndrome? So everybody is saying that. Okay, so the controversial bit for me would be that I don't know if I think I have imposter syndrome, but as I said earlier, like, that doesn't mean that I don't feel anxious about certain things or unsure about certain things or lacking in confidence about certain things because I may not have the experience. But do I feel like I'm an imposter and I shouldn't be there? I don't know. I almost feel like every individual has the opportunity to be in a moment where they can add value and an impact. And when you have that moment, it's up to you to take it and rise to it. And to me, like, I don't feel like I don't deserve to be there. I feel like everybody deserves to be where they're at. It's up to us then to determine what we want to do with it. So I would say, like, for me, I don't identify very much with imposter syndrome, but I certainly identify very much with sometimes not feeling very sure of myself, sometimes even doubting myself. But I still almost always feel like confidence is a big thing. And in a way, you have to fake it till you make it. And when you are in these uncomfortable positions, I think that's where growth happens. So I like being in uncomfortable positions. I think I try to put myself in more and more of these situations so I get more comfortable. And I think I would argue the more people build tools and resilience to do that, I think the less they would feel that they don't belong or they shouldn't be there because they feel like an imposter. So, yeah, that would be my encouragement to women is just like fake it till you make it. And, you know, just trust your instincts and just believe that you deserve to be there. I think Churchill said this, and I love that quote. And it talks a little bit about trust, which is the only way you know you can trust someone is by trusting someone. And I think it applies to trusting yourself too. The only way you know you can trust yourself that you should be there is by just trusting yourself. So that would be my encouragement to women and particularly young women.
We'll go on into more general questions. Could you give us a brief definition of risk advisory and your role at Deloitte before we start?
No, happy to actually do that. And I'm just curious, like, maybe just for the perspective of your audience, what I may do is just say risk advisory is one of five businesses that Deloitte has. And when I look at the business of risk, I find it to be one of the most innovative places to be. So, in simple words, my practice or our business allows clients to build trust with their stakeholders, and these could be their employees, the communities they serve, and the country they actually work in. We also help organizations become resilient. So, actually, not just adapt to change, but thrive under changing circumstances, and particularly under very dynamic economic, financial, regulatory, social environments. And then finally, we help organizations actually become sustainable, human, and impactful. So when I look at the business of risk, we're actually helping organizations be those trusting, resilient, sustainable organizations when it comes to some of the most iconic topics of a generation. And so these days, there would be significant regulatory reform. It could be aspects around climate change and broader ESG. It would be topics such as threat and threats around cyber, particularly. It could be around leadership and organizational resilience. So I find that the relevant topics change given what's going on in the world. And our practice is essentially helping organizations navigate that change around those important topics in a very meaningful way.
That's really interesting.
Diverse. Yeah, very diverse. Perfect.
Our next question is, how has generative AI impacted or improved the risk advisory sector? Or do you think that this would be considered your next big challenge, and how do you plan to navigate it?
Yeah, like I would say, you know, 6 months ago, we had just started to hear about generative AI. And I think just in the last 6 months, there has been like so much momentum built around a wide variety of things. One, I think it's democratized access to AI in a way that I have not seen before. Meaning, whether you have a tech background or a coding background, if you can ask good, smart, intelligent questions, you are able to build models and ask provocative things of a model to solve some really complex problems. So I think the democratization of technology is very powerful. So now it's not limited to a few individuals, but the fact that anybody can use it to solve really complex problems. I see the applications everywhere. I mean, I have stepkids when they were looking to look for, you know, their purpose statements or personal statements for application to universities. It gives you a really cool first draft that's actually quite thoughtful. It's quite pertinent. It gives you ideas on what certain schools will actually care about. Similarly, like when I was renting out my apartment, I could actually get a draft contract coming out of ChatGPT. I know, even though my practitioners won't say so, but I know that they're using ChatGPT on a day-to-day basis to determine how to engage on a specific client scenario as well, looking up at policies, processes, practices, risks, and it gives them an edge around coming up with a really good first draft. And then I think when I look at our clients, they're doing the same things as well to say, how do I use the power of generative AI to make my business more efficient, to make my business more effective, and actually allow for humans to look at more value creation versus doing repeatable tasks that actually drained a lot of resources. So I would say I've seen a lot of momentum on this front in the last 6 months, and risk advisory is no different to it. So if I were to think about where we are using Gen AI, would be in three big categories. One is from a risk standpoint, we're helping organizations really talk about what is the ethical parameters and boundaries around use of generative AI. What should and shouldn't you do? What are the risks around that, and how do you effectively navigate and manage that? How do you sort of adapt to the regulatory requirements that are around Gen AI as it relates to your industry or your organization? The second piece is around application to actual risk domains. So how do I use specific businesses and processes and apply generative AI to make them more efficient and create more value to the various stakeholders? So I think that's really exciting as well. And the last piece I would say is, how does Gen AI actually transform the way we do business today? So we are a highly people-based firm, and I think it's going to disrupt the way we recruit, the levels at which we recruit, the leverage model at which we are recruiting today, in a quite a dramatic way. So I would say we've spent the last 6 months getting really purposeful around these three big topics. And I think it would be one of the most transformative things for our generation, and also quite exciting. And I do have confidence that when we take on generative AI in the context of doing it with appropriate ethics and purpose around it, I think we will actually create change that is good for humankind, quite frankly.
You spoke about having a tech background. I'm curious, where did you study in what domain?
Excellent question. I actually had signed up for engineering school when I was younger, because quite frankly, I'm Indian and my parents would have wanted me to actually just do that. And then I quickly realized that I actually have nothing in common and I shouldn't be an engineer and I would make a very bad engineer and I would be very miserable over a period of time. And no offense to my fabulous engineer friends and students, because I think what you do is very cool. I just didn't feel like I would be great at it. So then I switched to business and commerce. So I have an undergrad degree in commerce. I then eventually ended up doing my CA, which in Canada is now called CPA. I went to university in India, and I have to say, what was really cool, the phase in which I went to university is you could do your CA while you were in university as well, which meant by the time I graduated, I had had not just a undergrad degree, but I had a professional designation and I had worked with Deloitte for 3 years already. So it just gave me an edge that by the time I was 19, like I had had experience and a professional designation, it also meant that I had no fun in university at all because I had a full-time job. I was studying constantly, so I had no fun whatsoever. But then I feel like I'm making up for it now, in some ways, but that would be my background.
That's great. You've spoken a lot about building relationships, and I was just curious if you would say that your leadership style focuses on cultivating those strong relationships within your team and how exactly you do that.
100%. Shiraz, I think the human connection is a really powerful thing. And I think that it's at multidimensional levels. So whether it's genuinely understanding, not just like when I'm in a client service business. So when I think about a client can be an organization which feels very cold and passive and an object, a very inhuman object. But the truth is, when I think about clients, I think about individuals behind these organizations. And when you build deep, trusted relationships with individuals, What makes you realize is what motivates them, what are their fears, and what do they really want to get out of their time in that organization at a given point in time? And just getting that trusted relationship allows you to understand the deeper motivation behind why they have engaged you versus just doing a piece of work. Doing a piece of work is easy and it can be commoditized. And I think there's a lot of smart people who can do it, not just in our firm, but everywhere. But I think what differentiates what we do is building those deep trusted relationships where we really want to get to the heart of what really makes you tick and what do you really want to get out of when you engage us on a given assignment. So that's in the context of client relationships. I also think in the context of relationships within an organization, whether that is with my peer group, whether that is with my teams, whether that is with individuals that I report into. And it's the same thing. I think at the end of the day, we spend so much time at work. Majority of our time in life is spent at work. And if you don't understand what motivates each other, it's harder to understand how can I give somebody career advice to try out something different, to not leave, but rather stay, or sometimes actually to leave so you can try and do something different. I think if you have those relationships, it allows you to better affect someone's career, better coach them as to what is important for them. When you are in peer relationships as well, it allows me to then also demonstrate why am I unique. So as an example, there's a lot of really smart people in my business that can be called upon by a fellow colleague. So if I have a colleague in consulting and they have a client that is looking for something specific in risk, they can call any of my 150 partners. The fact that they'll choose to call me is because they trust me. And having a good relationship allows people to build that trust. So when they have information or when they have opportunities with respect to a client, when they know that, they can trust me that I will not jeopardize their client relationships or their brand on a specific engagement or with a specific team member, that becomes a real differentiator, doesn't it? And then finally, I would say, as an individual, like I think it's exciting when you have deep relationships, you feel like you have a sense of belonging, that I'm not in this inanimate organization that feels really cold. At the end of it, I'm in an organization where I genuinely love and care for the people I work with. And that's why for me, Deloitte's not just a firm I built my career in. I would describe that as an emotion. It is so deep-rooted in who I am. It is an organization that's allowed me to actually grow up as a human being, as a professional, as a leader, as a parent even. And that would only be possible if I had the deep, unbelievable relationships at the firm where even the idea, Manu, when you asked me, would you ever leave Canada? And I think that would apply to would I ever leave Deloitte? I think it would be really hard because it is the relationships that make Deloitte such a unique place to work for me personally, because I just haven't seen the magic of what we have anywhere else. And that is a pretty hard thing to beat. And so that would my other encouragement to all of you is I notice a trend around building transactional relationships. When we don't connect with each other in person during complicated situations, I think our relationships can be very surface level and not as deep. And when you don't have deep relationships, I think the sense of connection and belonging is not as strong, which means how you feel about an organization, the loyalty that you have, your mental wellness, I think all of that gets compromised. And so my encouragement would be like invest in those relationships and hopefully like, non-social media relationships and just having really good deep conversations and solving some really cool problems together and going through hard things. Those are when you build deeper, strong relationships with one another.
If you want to add on to it, it's as a business student, we are presented with numerous career paths and major, and it can be quite overwhelming. And there's seem there like there seem to be a lot of pressure to decide what we want to be right now. What advice would you give to our listeners who are in this position?
Wow, I have to say, it is harder for you guys. Like when I was graduating from university, there were just a finite number of streams you could get into. And so that made life easy, quite frankly, right? Like I don't know if you noticed this. If you go shopping at the grocery store, and if I get like 20 brands of peanut butter, I actually don't know which one I can buy. But if you gave me two choices, I can actually make the decision quite quickly. And I think that is so true with everything that you're dealing with. I mean, the amount of information that is targeted at young students today must make it really, really hard to navigate a very complex, but also rapidly changing economic and business environment. So I just want to acknowledge that I do think it's hard because I did not have access to this degree of information, which also meant, depending on the circles you were in, you either had a huge advantage or a huge disadvantage. I do think the access to information can be democratizing in some ways. It doesn't matter if you come from privilege that you have access to information. You have access to information if you have internet, quite frankly, right? So that has actually allowed for democratization, which I think is amazing. Listen, here's what I'll say. Even though the world is changing, there are some very common factors that will allow you to be successful. And the definition of success might vary because I hear with the young generation, it feels different than what it meant to me. But my encouragement would be, number one, I notice the young kids of today, but I don't mean young kids, but students coming out of organizations or universities like yours, very, very eminent, incredibly smart. The degree of confidence that I see in your generation today, I never saw that in my time. We were, quite compliant. We had a hard time raising our hands and speaking up. But I think you are such a confident generation. You're such a well-informed generation. Then number one, I'll say, just be courageous to try out different things. And my encouragement would be, don't just do things because you think it's going to make you a lot of money. Do things because you have genuine passion for it. And that it requires courage because it is hard not to get bombarded with internet to see who has what. And that can make you do some very interesting things that do not believe long-term value, in my view. So in that vein, my advice would be get inside yourself and understand what do you have real passion for? And then what are you really good at? Because you can be passionate about something but not really great at it. So if you can like do a self-assessment, genuine self-assessment on intersecting passion with what you're great at, go follow that. And once you do that, I promise you, you'll figure if you follow your passion and you're great at something, I think you will differentiate yourself in a way that, quite frankly, is unbeatable. And then when you differentiate yourself, which becomes unbeatable, I do genuinely believe success in traditional ways such as seniority, power, money, eminence will follow. But don't be in the pursuit of those things. Be in the pursuit of the passion. Be in the pursuit of, what you want to be great at. And that would be my certainly number one encouragement to students these days, because you have a lot of options. Number two, I would say don't be afraid to be different. I do find, and I think this can be a little bit for women as well. I have a stepdaughter who is 19, who is at university in England. And I find, teenage girls can sometimes like follow one another. There can be this mindset of group thing. I think that might apply to all teenagers, quite frankly. But I certainly think from my vantage point, I see her sort of being quite influenced by what your peer group is doing. My encouragement, particularly to young women, would be don't be afraid to be different. And not for the sake of being different, but just genuinely understand what you're going to be great at. What do you really want to do? And it doesn't matter if your friend's not going to do that. It doesn't matter if your boyfriend or girlfriend's not going to do that. It's okay. You have a lifelong to pivot and try out different things that following your heart and really paying attention to it and being different is actually going to help you ultimately with happiness and genuine fulfillment in what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And I'll make just one more quick comment, and that would be just around curiosity. Again, groupthink can link to just following one another. And I think my encouragement would be genuinely spend time with different people, different stakeholders, people with different backgrounds, and truly understand, what makes them tick. Ask the deeper questions that don't get asked, and then pay attention to the answers to those deeper questions and see what resonates with you. So I think that would be my encouragement that if you stay true to those principles, the choices will become less overwhelming because the choices today can be quite daunting. It is certainly for me as I see the landscape of what's available out there today.
Yeah, my question is more a statement, but in school, we're mostly asked to follow a certain model. So it's really nice to hear different advice that says go out there, be different, go out of this model and be yourself. Because in business, authenticity is not the most, like, it's not praised. Like, most people tend to be someone they're not. So it's really nice to hear and to hear about someone that values authenticity.
Yeah, and Emmanuel, I would say like it's changing quite rapidly. I think 2023 is an amazing place to be in because you're bang on. I think we were all told that this is a version of you. If you work, particularly in corporations, like this is the version. You are calm under pressure, show no emotion. And I think we've evolved a lot. I would certainly say we at Deloitte genuinely appreciate that you bring your authentic self to work. Authenticity is also a real privilege. Authenticity also means that you appreciate others' authentic selves as well, right? And so it requires a great degree of tolerance, but I genuinely believe it is very hard to be somebody else. And if you're spending 40, 50, 60 hours a week trying to be somebody else, that must be that is so hard that it takes away from the impact and the value you want to create in the organization, the work that you want to do. So if we can abandon this facade of who we are expected to be and genuinely be ourselves, then you get to the work quite quickly, right? And then again, I think a sense of belonging and your mental health gets strengthened because you're not trying to be somebody else. And I would say that's, I think, Shiraz, you asked me the question, some of my barriers. I think I've always been an authentic leader. And I think it's been a little bit of a barrier and a differentiator at the same point. Like I feel I express passion, I express emotion, and I don't think corporate Canada is necessarily either in big ways. I use my hands when I talk. I say what I want to say, what's on my mind. I cry easily, and not because I'm weak, but because that's how I show emotion. It's not anger for me. I don't raise my voice. I become upset. And those can be seen as, emotionally unstable or not mature or not resilient. And so those are just barriers you have to overcome. But I'll say, just from my own experience, I've stayed true to that. And fast forward 2023, I think we live in a world where you called it is genuinely appreciated, not all the time. And so I have to find a way to calibrate as well. Because if the other person I'm with, their authentic self is to not be that way, I also have to respect that, right? And so it's a real dance that you do when you're in an organization to be yourself, but also let others be themselves and find that harmony together.
That's really inspirational. Thank you. For our last general question, we wanted to know, so we know that Deloitte has made it a priority to empower women and make them feel equal in the business place. What programs or actions have they implemented that made you proud to work at Deloitte?
So many, I would say. I mean, I would say at a macro level, Deloitte's a highly inclusive organization which wants to create opportunities for everybody. So I want to say it's not just for women, but everybody. But I would say, we have had to make very concerted efforts when it came to women in leadership. If we look at a broader base of professionals, we are 50-50 when it comes to our junior levels because we recruit from schools and programs where we are able to do that, at least in the non-tech, non-STEM spaces. We're trying to influence and change that. But when it comes to leadership positions, particularly manager, senior manager levels, the female population rapidly weans off. And so I would say certainly programs around sponsorship, programs around mentorship, programs around making sure many of our female managers and senior managers stick around so they can actually have a chance of becoming a partner and a leader in the firm has been a very, very deliberate effort in a way that I would say, me as a business leader, I'm measured on that every year. My partner class has to be a gender equal class. And that has been that way for the last 7 years. And I'm very proud that it is an important metric and outcome that we hold ourselves accountable to. And what that means is we become very conscious about our pipeline, our retention strategies, our coaching strategies, and the early interventions we need to do. I'll give you some very specific examples. When we look at applications, even from postgrad or undergrad, we try to blind them. We actually don't allow for any sort of gender or racial information to be disclosed. So when you are actually interviewing these individuals or shortlisting them, gender does not become the criteria. Because we have been told historically, if mostly men interview, most people have some sort of affinity bias, men or women. And we want to make sure that affinity bias actually does not go into play when we're recruiting individuals, both at the junior levels, but also the mid-management level. That in itself, I would say, has had a dramatic impact when it comes to the number of women we recruit, both at junior, but the middle levels as well. I talked a bit about STEM. If we let the natural course take place, we will simply not have enough women coming out of STEM courses. I'm an example of that. I studied math in my high school years. I'd enrolled for engineering, but then I dropped out. We do not see enough women in STEM today. And so the interventions we are making is essentially going to universities and high schools and encouraging programs that are targeted specifically at young women to join them. And our commitment to these organizations would be that if you ran a course, we would actually make offers to the entire cohort. We did a course, I won't name the university, for them to run a cyber curriculum. And the encouragement was, if you can recruit as many women as you could, we would give them all job offers. The class had 30 students, 23 of which were women. We made offers to all 30. All 23 women accepted our offers. If we didn't do interventions like that, and if we just let the normal course run out, we simply would not have enough women to choose from when it comes to sort of middle levels of management, but more specifically the pipeline for senior levels of management as well. So like I would say Deloitte's very progressive when it comes to making sure women feel that they belong and that they belong in a way that allows them to be their full selves, including having a real strong chance of being a senior leader in the organization as well.
No, I was going to say, it's incredible how Deloitte is not just talking, but also like acting and doing these interventions. I find that incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, and I would say also, like, if you look at our female leaders, like, I find it so cool that there isn't just one norm of female leader at Deloitte. Like, we are such a diverse female leadership group that I feel, like, so proud that you don't have to be like me to be a female leader. Because the truth is, if I were to look at myself, like, I was always ambitious, driven, assertive, confident. I knew exactly what I wanted. And you could argue that those are very masculine traits. And I think women felt you had to be a certain way to be successful. But when I look at a leadership cohort today, it has such variety. You have women who actually, you know, highly emphasize less sales and client relationships, but extensive and deep talent development. And they're really passionate about it. And we are recognizing that we need to also have a very diverse female leadership team. So when your generation comes along, you don't have to be just like me to be successful. You can be like yourself and yet have a real strong chance of being a leader. So I think that component I find is so cool and exciting that the diversity of female leaders, the camaraderie amongst ourselves is like truly inspirational and one of the big reasons why I continue to be at the firm and I continue to be inspired by the firm on a day-to-day basis.
It makes us young women be hopeful for a future in some type of way because it shows that we're on the right path. Like it,
totally,
it might
Manuel.
Not be all fixed, but it's
right.
Coming.
We are totally on the right path. And you know what? Like I remember growing up, people were telling me, you know what? Women leaders don't support women, blah, blah, blah. The reality couldn't be farthest from the truth, by the way, because when it was about the one woman that could be at the top, maybe there were different behaviors as a result of it. And I think we've come to a point, at least in our organization, where there are enough women at the table that that is not this. This isn't a finite marketplace for women. We're talking about infinite possibilities. And that means I find my female peers are incredibly supportive. They are incredibly generous with their time and energy and opportunities that I get provided. And I want to be incredibly supportive of the next generation as well, because that to me, like my personal motto has been that I would specifically make female leaders that are actually quite different than me, different experience, different type, different dimension, because it is quite critical that women feel like that sense of camaraderie, that there is a Not just that you have a great organization, but you have like this sort of girl code and connectedness that makes you seen, makes you feel valued, makes you feel like the possibilities are quite frankly limitless in the organization.
That's incredible. So that was it for a general question. We will now move on to some rapid fire question. The concept is that you have less than a minute to answer. We have seven of them. So are you ready?
I'm ready, okay.
Okay,
Perfect.
so to begin, in one sentence, how would you define success?
Okay, to me, it would be able to find happiness and excitement in what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, and yet being able to give it up and try something different.
Well, what is the best piece of advice that someone has ever given you?
And don't take yourself too seriously. And I would just say, like I did, which meant like I wouldn't just like take feedback because it felt like, oh, I'm trying so hard. And the moment I stopped taking myself that seriously, I think I have fun with what I'm doing.
What was your dream job as a child?
I wanted to be an astronaut. Just wanted to go to the moon.
You feel you've achieved that?
Oh my gosh, in a different way, right? I mean, it's not the actual moon, thank God. I'm so scared to even think about any sort of space travel. But yeah, like I am so proud of the career I've been able to have. And I genuinely mean it. If only today, if I were to retire, like today, I would be incredibly proud of the opportunities that I've been given and that I have given to others as well, and the legacy I have built. So, indeed, it feels like landing on the moon for sure.
If you were to write an autobiography, what would be the title?
Woman Unleashed.
That's perfect.
Oh, sounds scary, doesn't
A
it?
little bit. What's the first thing you do in the morning?
Ah, great question. These days I wake up my baby because she's sleeping with me in bed. But it used to be I would meditate, but it's been a minute since I have found my time to do that.
Perfect. We know that you have a profound appreciation for aesthetic and decor. What is your favorite part about your apartment?
Oh, you know what? I've moved. I'm now in this
Oh.
gorgeous house that we have renovated. And so maybe I'll talk about that. I love our, there's a little Scotch room that we've built. And during COVID, post-COVID, like it became like one of the places where my husband and I would sort of retire for the day, have a drink together, talk about the day. So I find that's like my special, beautiful space where we unwind after a long day.
Your safe space. So, our last question of the podcast is, what song would be the soundtrack of your life?
Ah, that is such a good question. What would that be? It's My Life, you think? Oh, no, I have a better one. Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that's
That's a
definitely the one. It's also the Deloitte Partner Anthem, by the way, and I genuinely believe
Oh.
it. And I'm like a bit of a dork when it comes to music from the 80s, but I think Don't Stop Believing is, I think it personifies just my approach and attitude in life as well.
It's a really good one.
Well, Poonam, thank you so much for your time. Honestly, we have learned so much. Your positive outlook on life is inspiring. Your I guess priority for building strong relationships, gaining diverse perspectives, and learning how to take risks with confidence and seeing them as learning opportunities and just ways to grow is something that I know Manuel and I will really hold on to and remember for our entire lives. So thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, guys, and for the great questions and making me feel so comfortable. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I can't wait to talk to you soon again.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, feel free to drop a comment or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and our social medias. See you next time.
The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and to inform our listeners. It is by no means a substitute for professional guidance by qualified experts. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute financial or other professional advice or services. Instead, we encourage you to discuss your career options, as well as financial undertakings with other professionals who specialize in wealth, securities, and asset management, or any other field in financial services. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at a personal and individual risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice. Guests who speak on this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. The views expressed on this platform are personal opinions and only, and should not be construed as financial advice for your given situation or from a given institution. While all attempts are made to present accurate information, it may not be appropriate for specific circumstances, and information may become outdated over time. No firm, nor any company providing financial support endorses or opposes any particular view or tools discussed in this podcast. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Advertising, which is incorporated into, placed in association with, or targeted towards the content of this podcast is forbidden. This podcast may not be edited, modified, or redistributed. The Corporate Chat Podcast has no liability for any personal activities in connection with this podcast or for personal use of this podcast in connection with personal websites, computers, or playing devices. Moreover, the Corporate Chat Podcast makes no warranty that this podcast or the server that makes it available is free of viruses, worms, or other elements or codes that manifest contaminating or destructive properties. McGill University and our sponsors expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, reliance on, or inability to use this podcast or the information presented in this podcast.